again for another episode of The Wrap, the 42nd one.
We believe.
We think. I want you to put that on there, yeah, by the way, is whatever the episode 42. Question mark. We think is how I want you to put that on there when it shows on Facebook. We're back for episode 42, and today we talk about, it's really kind of exciting because, again, we've been kind of going along for, I think, like 8 weeks maybe or so in the Bible, mm-hmm, engagement project, mm-hmm, and our journey through the Bible. And we've been, I've been kind of joking around with the people that they think we're going to make it through the Bible in a year. I mean, we've been stuck in Genesis for 8 weeks.
We're getting ready to just pick it up and move.
We are. Yeah. And I said, you know, there's a good reason for that. And I said that from the very beginning. I think I even said it this last week too, is that Genesis is such a foundational book to everything, yeah, that you talk about for the rest of the way, that you really
have
to understand.
It just sets the groundwork for everything.
You, yeah, do. You have to understand the themes and everything that God is doing in Genesis to be able to help it. And I think that's part of the problem sometimes, is why we don't understand, or we dislike stories, or we just don't find them very relevant, is because we don't really go back to the beginning of things and understand what God did at the very beginning in Genesis, and, you know, and people like Abraham and Isaac and now Joseph today. It sets everything, yeah, on course and makes you understand when you get further in the story, like, oh, that's why that's so important, or oh, that's why God says that. And so it's kind of exciting today because this wrap episode and this last Sunday was our last Sunday in Genesis.
Yeah.
Finishing that up. We are in Genesis 50 today, talking about what to me is probably, one of my favorite stories, mm-hmm, in Genesis, if not a lot of the Old Testament. It's a really, really powerful story about Joseph and his brothers. And you have a younger sister.
I do, yeah.
I have a younger brother and sister. I want you to imagine this scenario. Your sister comes to you. You guys watching, your brother or sister, younger brother or sister come to you. And they say, now mind you, this is Joseph. And I set this up on Sunday a lot better and like kind of gave a description of who Joseph is.
He was the chosen one. Yeah.
He was a chosen one. I said he was the one that got like the extra piece of chicken at dinner. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was chomping. They were chomping on black licorice at Halloween time. He got the king-size Kit Kat bar. Yeah. You know, that's yeah, everything about how Joseph, yeah, was. I also made it.
He was obviously the favorite child.
He was. I said, yeah, all the rest of the kids and Jacob's family were getting clearance clothing from Dollar General. Joseph was getting a mink coat from Saks Fifth Avenue. I mean, you get the yeah, point of who it was.
Yeah, they already probably had the sort of dislike.
Couldn't
for the
stand
guy
him
anyway.
They,
yeah,
couldn't stand him from the very beginning, and then he starts having dreams. And what
then
are
he
the,
starts running his mouth about the dreams.
What are the,
right,
nature of his dreams? Do you remember?
Yeah, the nature of both of the dreams were, yes, they ended up bowing down to him and serving him.
And it's a prophecy, because, yes, they do eventually end up doing that. They but do. What does Joseph do wrong?
He tries to get out of God's timing with everything.
He does, and he's a little jerk about it.
Yeah.
He's like, by the way, I just want to let you know, brothers, mom, dad.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just his brothers, his parents,
yeah,
too.
I mean, that's normal and natural,
if
right?
If I were to go up to my mother and say, Mom, I think you're going to bow down to me.
Your head would be on the floor, wouldn't it?
I would even know what happened.
Yes. You wouldn't even be able to get the words out of your mouth, probably. But this is what this little snot does.
Yeah.
Twice. And so they're already mad at him because he's the chosen one. He has the Technicolor dream coat that dad has made him because he's his favorite one. And it says one day in the story that Jacob sends Joseph out to the brothers to check on them. They're sheep herders, you know, and they're out there doing their thing. And so Joseph goes, checks on
Which
them.
Which also notice he wasn't out doing and helping them, right?
Like, it's a big part of the story. That's exactly, honestly, and this is what I was telling him on Sunday. Just time out. Bonus information for you here. When we talk about Joseph having a coat of many colors, it wasn't necessarily that it was a coat of many colors, as it was actually the technical and literal translation there is a coat of long sleeves. And what that meant, it was meant specifically to signify things like you are the most important, you are VIP, and yes, that you don't do any manual labor. So, again, think about all those things.
So he comes out with this coat on.
Like, oh, geez. And they're like, here comes this guy again.
Yeah.
And they concoct a plan, don't they? They're like, we're done with this. He's ticked us off. He's getting all the good stuff. He doesn't have to do any of the nasty chores. He's not cleaning toilets. He's not taking out trash. He's not changing the kitty litter.
Yeah.
He's doing nothing. We're going to kill him. One of the brothers steps up and says, well, that's a little far, guys, right? I don't like him just as much as you don't like him. Well, it's a little much. And so they concoct a plan and they do what?
They sell him to Satan?
Well, before that.
They throw him in a pit.
Throw him in a pit. I'm convinced they actually beat on him a little bit. You know, because you have to do
that
to the
little
brother.
They didn't just be like, here, step down
in
here.
Yeah. Let's put this ladder.
I have a feeling he was pushed.
Oh, let's put this ladder down into this pit for, you know, they punched on him pretty good because that's what big brothers do.
Yeah.
They beat up on the little brother, punched him around a little bit, beat him up, roughed him up, got him a little bloody, and then kicked his little hiney right in that cistern, in that well. Lucky for him, it was dry.
Right.
It wasn't full. I just, and you know, you would be tempted in that, wouldn't you? Be like, oh, that was a coincidence, right? That it wasn't full of water, that he didn't fall in there and drown. And there's nothing in this story about Joseph that is a coincidence at all. It's a God plan kind of thing. So they put him in this cistern, and they're going to leave him basically there to rot and die. Until they see these traders on their little route come by, and they say, ah,
we can make some money.
We can make some money off this guy, all right? They sell him. They sell him into Egypt. They sell him specifically into the house of a man named Potiphar, who just so happens, coincidentally, not, to be a very important person of power and position and prestige, free peace, in the kingdom of Egypt. And so he ends up there. We know how the rest of the story goes. We're kind of just telling a lot. I mean, we're telling Genesis 39 to 50 in the span of like a few minutes. Ends up in Potiphar's house. He rises to the ranks of being in command of all of Potiphar's affairs.
Trust him with everything.
And trust him with everything. Yeah. Because it says very importantly in Genesis 39:2, even when all of this, it seems like everybody had forgotten about Joseph. It says in Genesis 39:2, the Lord was with Joseph.
Yeah.
And he's there. He's in control. Potiphar says, I don't have to worry about a thing because I can see the Lord is with you. And then Potiphar's wife. She's got a little bit of the eye for Joseph, doesn't it? I mean, like, Joseph was probably a pretty strapping young lad. She might have been a looker, too. But Potiphar's busy. He's managing the affairs of the kingdom for Pharaoh. And so she's lacking some attention. She wants to get it from Joseph really, really bad. So much so that she falsely accuses Joseph of messing around. And he gets thrown into prison, where he meets a baker and a cupbearer. Pharaoh's baker and cupbearer, coincidentally, right?
Absolutely not.
And you would
not.
Think every part, no, absolutely not. Every part of this story, it seems like, dang, Joseph, you've got a really rough and horrible life.
Well, and at any point in time, I think he could have sat down, woe is me, man.
He could have.
At the bottom of the barrel.
Great, great point. That any time in the story, he could have been like, God has forgotten about me. He's abandoned me. He doesn't care about me. I'm just, woe is me. And he doesn't. He continues to serve faithfully. And say, God, why have you put me here? I feel like you've put me here for a reason. So he's in prison, and he again ascends to the level of a second command in this prison system. These two guys have dreams. Joseph interprets these dreams, and it's kind of funny. That part makes me laugh, by the way. He's like, you, chief cupbearer, are going to be giving your position back, and you're going to be attending to Pharaoh, and it's all going to work out great for you. And the baker does what? He goes, well, obviously, that must mean my dream's going to be awesome, too, right?
Yeah.
Not so much. You're going to be dying impaled. Like, oh, sorry I even asked. All that turns out, Joseph, before the cupbearer leaves prison, says, please don't forget me. Tell Pharaoh about me to get me out of here. 2 years pass. This guy is
and
totally
forgotten
about
me. And I'm sure he's probably thinking, yeah. Joseph's probably thinking, yeah, I'm stuck.
At this point, he could have been like, yep, that's my story. Yeah. That's my life. Everybody forgets about me. Nobody wants to have anything to do with me. But then Pharaoh starts to have dreams. Cupbearer, oh, darn, I forgot to tell you about this.
Yeah, remember about my friend and I.
Pulls
he
Joseph
got impaled,
in.
But...
Yeah, yeah. He got impaled. Yeah. I'm good. But Joseph can interpret dreams. Joseph is pulled out of prison. He's put before Pharaoh. And he says, well, here's the deal. I can't interpret dreams, but I do know the God who can tell about the future, interprets these dreams for Pharaoh, and then again, for a third time in the story, he's elevated to a position of importance, vice president of all of Egypt, which we would think of this day are like Egypt, not really a superpower. Back in that day, the power, the big boy on the block, second command, essentially not just of Egypt, but I would say second command of all the world. That's a pretty lofty position.
Yeah.
And as he's... there in that position, he concocts his plan because of the dreams. He says, hey, there's going to be a good time of plenty and abundance, but there's also going to be time of famine and really bad things happening here. In the course of time, as things go, it happens just as Joseph says. He has concocted a plan as where he saves up grain for them.
Right.
He begins to help everybody in Egypt, but as time comes along, he helps everybody in the region around him too, including, wouldn't you know it,
another quinky-dink.
Coinkydink, his brothers come to see him. They don't know it's him. He knows it, that who they
don't
are.
Don't you think that's interesting that they don't recognize him?
Yeah.
You think that was God kind of...
I don't know. Somebody has also...
Or the fact he may have just looked that different.
He's probably pretty buff at this point. I don't know.
Well taken care
somebody
of.
Somebody has made the joke that maybe it was because of the black eyeliner and the bronze serpent and the headdress. That, you know, could have had something to
maybe,
do with it.
Maybe.
Don't really know.
Do something different with
anyways, your he recognizes them. They don't recognize him. In a course of time, through a whole set of circumstances, Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. And it's at this point that we come in Genesis 50. And it's actually a little earlier in the story. This kind of happens too. But Genesis 50, the whole thing is set on this. Jacob dies, and the brothers go, oh no, we're dead meat now.
Yeah.
What are they so freaked out about? What
they have they were afraid that now that dad was gone, that Joseph would retaliate, and he would
exactly
try to get rid of them.
They say to themselves, dad was the only buffer that we had this entire time, and we feel like that Joseph was just putting on a show for dad, and now that he's gone, there's nothing that stands between him and cooking our goose. And an amazing thing. And again, I think when we look at Genesis 50, most of the time what we do is like, okay, we should take a message of forgiveness from this. Yeah. Like, well, it's there for sure. He has not only forgiven his brothers, he has reconciled them. I didn't really talk about this much on Sunday, but forgiveness and reconciliation are two related things, but they're different things. Forgiveness really is the expunging, if you will.
Right. Releasing somebody.
From of a relational debt. I can't remember exactly how that worked out, but it was almost like somebody said this, forgiveness and reconciliation. Forgiveness is if somebody took your vehicle and they went out and they wrecked it, you saying, I'm disappointed and I'm not really happy, but I'm not going to hold this against you. Reconciliation is you saying, when you get your next car, I'll give you the keys again to this car. That's unheard huge. Of. That's what Joseph does to his brothers in a much more massive sense.
Yeah.
You ruined my life at so many levels, what Joseph could have said to his brothers. You ruined my life and put me in positions that I didn't need to be in, but what does Joseph end up saying off of all of this? What's his big line, like the big line in Genesis 50?
What God...
You intended to do this.
What they intended for bad.
Evil and harm.
God intended for good.
God took this and turned this for good. The saving of your lives.
Thanks them for it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he doesn't flat out say thank you, but you can hear it like, hey, what you did.
Not only them, but God too.
Saved a bunch
thank
of people.
You, God.
Yeah.
Like, who in the world in their right mind can say that and would say that?
Yeah.
Thank you, God, that you sent me through all of this stuff.
Because, I mean, when you think of that, it's everything, right? The prison sentence, the
being thrown into a well,
slavery,
the prison sentence, all of that. Thank you.
Yeah.
You guys intended this and had your own motive and plan for this, but God had an even greater plan.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, I think looking at the story of Genesis 50 and seeing only forgiveness is a very small view of the story. There's so much more going on in that. And just really quickly, what we talked about on Sunday were three different things that we see this. Joseph is thrown into that pit at 17 years old.
Right.
I'm really not sure, honestly. I didn't do a calculation of years of when he sees his brothers again, of how old he is. But the kid that he is at 17 and the man that he is now as vice president of Egypt, completely different people.
Yeah,
he is a changed man. And what I would call it is he has a changed heart. And I think we can look for the same things in our life. I think so many times in life we ask ourselves, am I a different person this week than I was last week? Am I a different person this month than I was last? Am I a different person this year than I was last year? I think looking at the story, there are some very clear markers and indicators in Joseph's life that we can also kind of apply to our life as well and say, how do we know that we're changed?
Right.
Especially when it comes to life is rough.
Yeah.
It's tough. It throws us for loops. And what do we do in that? Do we sit and do we, woe is me? Or do we understand that I'm a changed person because of things that, I don't have to like the things that happen to me.
Right.
But I realize I'm different.
It's not saying that life is just going to be, rainbows and unicorns.
It's going to be tough. Right. But what's going to be changed about me? Am I going to be bitter because of it? Or am I going to be better because of it?
And I think that whole thing is am I going to turn inward on that, or am I focused on God? And am I going to turn outward?
So the three things really quickly that we talked about, I wish I had more time to kind of delve into it, but we don't. And the first one is this, that Joseph chooses to not sit in God's chair.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is we have a tendency in life to take the position of authority and superiority, don't we, in life?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We
like that driver's seat.
I won't even say we. I'm just going to say me.
Oh,
I really like to put myself in a position of judgment and condemnation towards people. And what the Bible is so very clear about, and especially in the story of Joseph, is you can't do that.
Yeah.
You have got to get out of God's chair. I think of Romans chapter 12 towards the end of it. Paul is writing there, and he comes to a point where he's talking about this concept of revenge. He says very clearly, he says, vengeance is mine, says the Lord.
Right. This is an imperative.
Don't be taking things into your hands. We talked about this actually way back in like week two of this whole Bible journey, is that all of our problems, most all of our problems, if not all of them, stem from our inability to understand that we are not God, to always put ourselves in the position of God. And this is one big one here, as it has to do with bitterness and hatred and taking authority that's not ours.
Right.
Is that we have to, at every moment of our lives, get out of God's chair.
Yeah.
This isn't my thing to judge. It's not my thing to decide on. And that's tough, isn't it, right?
Oh, gosh. That's so tough to, especially when, you know, in Joseph's case, you know, we may even see and, you know, we may even feel like we know where God is leading to. I mean, I'm sure sitting in prison for that time, you know, he was probably remembering those dreams, like something's wrong.
Yeah, here, something's off know? Here.
And to try to take matters into your own hands to make that happen, mm-hmm. so tempting.
Which is very interesting because you think about so many stories that come before the Joseph story. Mm-hmm. Every one of them has to do with somebody stepping outside of God's plan.
Yeah.
Doing things their way, in their own time. Joseph could have done that at almost every turn, you know, in the prison. He could have gone to the person in charge. Yeah. Like, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. I didn't do this. I didn't, but he doesn't.
He stays
quiet, and this is very interesting to me. I didn't really draw this connection much until now. I didn't say anything about it on Sunday, but every time, every week we walk through this, we say, where do we see Jesus in this story?
Yeah.
And don't you think there's something very similar about the way that Joseph handles injustice, cruel treatment, and how Jesus does?
Oh, of course.
What does it say in the book of Isaiah about the promised Messiah? Like a lamb led to the slaughter.
Yeah.
He said nothing.
Yeah,
he's before Pilate in the New Testament, in the Gospels, towards the end
could
of those Gospels.
Could have pleaded his case right there.
Could have said, you know, and Pilate even says that. Then he goes, you realize I have all the power in the world. Why don't you just tell me who you are? And what does he say? He goes, you have no power unless it's been given to you. I willingly and voluntarily go to the cross. I'm willing and voluntarily laying down my life. That's very similar to Joseph.
Yeah.
He's accused of
being inappropriate with Potiphar's wife and says nothing. Like, he doesn't fight.
Never in the story does he fight anything. Not even fight the plan that God is working in his life. And so I think that that's really eerily similar to Jesus.
Yeah.
So the first thing is we have to get out of God's chair.
Hmm.
Second thing is we have to take God's view. I'm no survivalist. I like being out in the woods and hiking for the day. I don't really like to spend much time out there, like overnight. I will if I have to, but it's like, you know, not my cup of tea. I do understand one really important thing about survival, though. If you ever get lost, what do they tell you to do, Levi?
Stay put.
Right? Stay put, go to a high place.
Oh, well, that makes sense, too. I'm not a survivalist, can you
see?
Tell?
Neither one of us are. We are not survivalists.
I'm just going to sit down.
I know this about watching enough Bear Grylls and what was the other guy's name? I think his name's like Les Stroud or something like that. I can't remember what his name is. Anyways, watch enough of those shows.
Yeah. So go to the highest place you can find.
Get to a high place because you're never going to find and get your bearings if you're in a low place. You've got to get to a high place to be able to see what's around you, where you need to go, where you came from. And I think it's so very important because I really think that so many people in life live from what I call a bottom-up perspective.
You know, everything looks way bigger from the bottom up.
It's like, oh, here I am in the valley. And like, it, guess I'm not trying to demean or diminish anything that somebody goes through in life. But it just doesn't do any good. Like, there's a time to mourn and there's a time to, like, have some pity. But, like, it does no good to stay down here in a valley. You have to get to a higher, you have to get to God, what I call not a bottom-up perspective. You have a top-down, I call it a God perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, what in the world could God possibly be wanting me to get out of this? That's a high place. To be able to come out of that valley, get to that spot, and start to ask those questions about life. And Joseph does that. And you can tell he understands that because he says that line. Yeah. What you intended for evil. And guys, it was evil. Yeah. It was harmful.
He wasn't saying what they did was
No, he didn't excuse good, at all. Right. He didn't excuse at all what they had done. But you intended for evil to harm me. God intended it. It was his plan to work good out of this. That's a God perspective. That's taking God's view. And this is about actually Genesis 50 verses 19, 20, and 21. 19 is get out of God's chair. 20 is take God's view. Verse 21 is that we need to, after we do both those things, and I really feel like those two things are prerequisites. I think Joseph had gone through those things and he had lived through that. And so for, he was able to get to number three, which was to image, reflect God's love. He says, here's the deal, guys. You don't believe me and you've not believed me to this point, and it's actually kind of hurtful, but I forgave you a long time ago, guys.
Yeah.
Again, you intended for harm. God intended for good. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take care of you. And not only am I going to take care of you, I'm going to take care of your children. Yeah. And then it says very simply at the very end, he spoke kindly to them.
Yeah.
God, that is the epitome of loving your enemies. You know, we talk about that all the time, and we preach so many sermons on that, about what it means to love your enemies. That right there.
Yeah. Well, because at that point in time, he owed them nothing.
No.
He could have easily just said, sorry about you.
Yeah.
You know.
But I'm going to continue to provide. Right. I've already provided for you. I'm going to continue to provide for you. I'm going to provide for your children. That's imaging and reflecting God's love.
And I think
love.
You're right. I think that's those first two have to come first. They have to. Because until you see the problem, you know, until you get out of yourself, which is, you know, letting God have his rightful place, right? Mm-hmm. And you take a step back.
Yeah.
And you take a look from where God's standing. It's impossible for you to move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we talked about at the beginning, we talked about the tandem of forgiveness and reconciliation.
Right.
I would say that forgiveness is getting out of God's chair. Mm-hmm. The bridge between that and reconciliation is verse 20, taking God's view. Reconciliation is verse 21, imaging and reflecting God's love.
Yeah.
So you see all that.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, that's, and there again, you see those similarities with Joseph and Jesus, right? You know, Jesus willingly gives up his life.
His life.
Then takes our punishment and then
reconciles. Wait a minute, don't forget this. Willingly goes, voluntarily goes.
Forgives.
Gets out of that chair.
Father, forgive them for
their doing. Father, forgive them for they not what don't they know do. What they're doing. Gives up his life. And in that moment, as he We're is reconciled. Saying, Father, why have you abandoned me and forsaken me? Gives up his final breath. At that moment, I'm convinced. And that connected with his resurrection.
Right.
Because that's an important part, obviously, as well. We're brought back.
Right.
Like, there is no greater kindness or love, or provision, or covering than Jesus' death on the cross and his subsequent resurrection to let us know, I've brought you back in relationship with your Father.
Yeah,
I mean, like, it's just like...
Because at that moment, again, Jesus had no... He owed us nothing.
No.
Well, I mean, at no point did he owe us anything.
As God, and Jesus is God, he needs us for nothing.
Right.
Owes us nothing, and yet he chooses to give us everything.
Yeah.
And so I think that we look at the story, a really fascinating story that ends the book of Genesis for us, and we see God's fingerprints all over this story.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's just so neat to where we've come from the very beginning week and creation and talking about that to where we are in Joseph's story, where we're going next week as we begin to step into Exodus and the story of Moses. All this stuff just continues to play. You're like, I'm starting to see this now. I'm starting to see the pieces come together.
With each piece, you see a little more glimpse of who God is. And
what, I think so.
How he feels for his creation.
I don't think so. I know so. That's exactly what it is. That's a great image there, that every story, every book, every word is just a fragment of an entire picture that when you put it together, you're like, yeah. I see Jesus for the first time like a way I've never seen him before. We hope that's what you're seeing as we're walking along. Again, we're only like, what, 9 weeks
into
this?
The Bible's like the picture on the puzzle box, right?
It is.
That's what that's supposed to be.
And you can't put the puzzle together hardly if you don't have that picture.
Yeah.
Same thing. You can't really know all of God's word unless you've got each individual piece and be able to put them together. And so again, I know we're only like 8-9 weeks into this. We have 40, you know, to get to the end. But you can already see we're on a really great path, a really great journey to see Jesus in all of the Bible and every person and every story and every book and every word of the Bible. Jesus is there. And so we hope that you continue to grab a hold of that and really begin to see the picture, if you will, fill in as we move through this. And so again, as always, thank you for being here and thank you for joining us. Share this, let other people know that this is going on, and we will see you next time.
See you guys.